what is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 136. John's out this week, and so joining me as co-host is Mr. Glenn Sizemore. Glenn, how's it going, buddy?
Man, it got cold all of a sudden. Fall got here in a hurry.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, you're so right, man. I was the guy that was wearing the shorts and the sweater for a couple of days, but yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, no, we're full-blown thermal zone here.
Thermal zone, got my hat on. I'm thinking about getting out even the gloves, but we'll see. So anyway, yeah, VMworld's been over for a couple of weeks now, and man, my brain, I'm still unpacking all the different things that I've learned and new things I saw. And one of the topics that we really wanted to get on the podcast soon was this concept of spatial computing, also known as XR, which is extended reality. This is the convergence of augmented reality and virtual reality, and it's a project that VMware has been working on for a while. So have you heard of it?
Oh yeah, man. I first ran into some of this stuff back at Radio earlier this year when I ran into Alan and got a sneak peek at some of the stuff that they were doing. And when I saw you put this on the schedule, I was excited because this is one of those places where VMware is starting to kind of peek around the corners and get ahead of what the industry is actually working on today. So I think it's going to be fun to pull the curtains back and talk about what tomorrow might look like.
All right, let's do this. Joining us this week to talk about spatial computing, or VMware's Project VXR, is project lead Matt Coppinger and our good friend Alan Renouf. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks, Pete. Thanks for having us.
So Alan, let's start with you. I know you've been in various projects since you've been at VMware. Why don't you tell us, what are you working on now?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, like you said, I've been here for a while. You know, I've been on previous podcasts with you guys talking about automation and vSphere and Power CLI and APIs, but I've kind of moved away from that area now into a advanced R&D research project in the office of the CTO that we are indeed calling Project VXR. Internally, it's what's known as an X Labs, which is basically where VMware gives you the opportunity to pursue an idea. And our idea was we're seeing virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, cross reality, whatever you want to call it. We call it spatial computing. We're seeing that in enterprises now being used for various different use cases, solving problems. And we wanted to see what VMware could do in that space. So nice. I'm now working with Matt and a bunch of other people on spatial computing.
And so Matt, where do you fit in this?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a kind of long timer at VMware. I've been here 12 years. And I joined when we started up the desktop business unit, which is now Indies Computing. So been around VMware for a long time and helped kind of build that business, had a bunch of different roles there for everything from R&D into kind of professional services, back into kind of tech marketing and various other roles, really just helping build that business. And, you know, I was fortunate to work with a whole bunch of customers on large deployments, doing things like VDI and doing, you know, mobile device management projects and things like that. And one of the things that I noticed, you know, working with companies like Airbus and many others is that AR and VR that I thought was kind of gaming or consumer type technology, but actually seeing it being impactful in the enterprise. And this made me really start to think. And 2 years ago, I saw that great demo that Alan did on stage with Pat Gelsinger, which was a fun little demo kind of throwing, you know, virtual VMs into the cloud, right, and live migrating them into AWS and stuff like that. And that just got me thinking about what else VMware could do in that space. So seeing what some of our customers were doing and seeing kind of where we're at with VMware, I started talking to Alan about what we could potentially do. And that spun up this kind of X Labs thing. So we put some ideas together, threw that out there, and fortunately, we've been given the opportunity to kind of run with it.
Very nice. Yeah, my first exposure, I think, to virtual reality and augmented reality, if you will, was actually at VMworld a couple of years ago on one of the days off. I went to a place called, what was it? It was one of the Gaudi houses. I think it's called like Casa de Bodia, something like that. But they had this, they call it virtual reality. I've since learned, I think it's closer to what we would refer to as augmented reality. But they give you this little iPad device and you're walking through this house that Gaudi designed years ago. And every room, you just hold the iPad up to the different rooms and it shows you what that room looked like when he designed it, you know, like what was there for these people. And so it was really cool because it was based on what is in front of you. It's not like some fully, you know, submerged VR, you know, solution, but they call it virtual reality. I think it's closer to augmented reality, which brings me to my first question for you guys is, what is the difference between augmented reality and virtual reality?
Certainly. I mean, that example that you just talked about is really augmented reality. And augmented reality is about, you know, overlaying digital information within your peripheral vision. So you're looking at reality with your own eyes and overlaying digital information. Now, some people might say, well, isn't that just smart glasses? There's this concept of smart glasses as well, which is overlaying digital information. You might have seen Google Glass, remember Google Glass, or Vuzix Blades if you're keeping up with the industry, right? And that's just overlaying kind of two-dimensional data. And the smart glasses typically don't have any concept or understanding of their 3D environment. And so this is how, you know, kind of what we would call assisted reality with smart glasses is different to augmented reality. With augmented reality headsets, they have this ability to kind of scan, you know, depth sense the environment and be able to place digital information with spatial context. So, you know, it can notice that there's a table in front of you and it can place a digital character or object on that table and apply all the appropriate lighting and things like that to make it look like it's actually part of reality. And there's some really cool AR apps out there today where you can try on like virtual sneakers, point your phone at your foot and you can see what a sneaker for you Americans, right? Trainers for us in Britain and the UK, see what the footwear looks like on your foot. So there's some really cool stuff happening with AR. So that's augmented reality is about overlaying digital information, but in a spatially contextual way.
Can you interact with it though? Like I know you say like if you pointed at a certain area, it shows you a table, but that's just giving me information. Can I do anything with that? Can I change it? Do I make any changes, or is it strictly just you pointed it a certain way and it reacts the same way every time?
Sure. So it really depends on the capabilities of the device. But when I say, you know, a table, it can actually recognize the real table and the surface of the table and then place objects on top of that and apply things like shadows. So it looks like the virtual object is sitting on the real table. And then you can interact with that object and it will move that, you know, let's have a fun example, right? Which is a consumer thing, right? Moving a character, right? That character could run along the table, right? And it could run around the table, could climb up the wall and that kind of thing. And so there's some cool demos in regards to that. So really, that's what we're talking about is with augmented reality, is understanding the physical space around you. And there's lots of opportunities then to kind of bring data feeds in. If you can imagine an IoT device that might be in front of you, right? Pulling the feeds from that and overlaying the state of the IoT device on top of the device. The device itself might not actually have a physical interface, but you could then interact with the IoT device, have a virtual UI overlaid on top of that IoT device, right? And interact with it. So there's lots of different opportunities there where we can bring in data from the real world and overlay it on the real world with spatial context. And that's kind of augmented reality. And if we move on to virtual reality is very different. Virtual reality is putting the user in a synthetic environment. So these are the kind of the headsets that you see where people kind of put on the headset.
Oh yeah.
Their view is occluded, right? They can't see anything around them. But what they can see inside the headset is a very immersive kind of 360 environment. And that's virtual reality. It's putting the user in a synthetic environment, okay? And that's really great for training scenarios. Obviously, it's very popular in gaming. But in the enterprise, we're seeing huge interest in and impact in using this for training scenarios. Yeah, everything from kind of healthcare, oil and gas, manufacturing, right? Just the ability to kind of train people in a reasonably low cost manner, right? Without putting them into dangerous situations or, you know, putting them in the factory without any proper training. So there's lots of interesting uses for VR in the enterprise. And then there is another one. And this is where it gets interesting when we talk about mixed reality. So mixed reality is where you bring, and it's a little bit confusing because Microsoft have their own term for mixed reality, but let's just ignore that. But this is our thinking around mixed reality, or our understanding of mixed reality. Mixed reality is when you bring the real world into virtual reality. So if you were to stick some cameras on your VR headset, you can start to bring elements of reality into VR. I'll give you a good example of this. The kind of US military is looking at putting pilots in a real world cockpit. So the cameras pick up the real world cockpit, but everything outside of that cockpit is virtual reality. So they've got a virtual reality headset on, the cameras can see the real cockpit and they stream the video from the cameras onto the headsets. They see and interact with the real cockpit. But everything outside the cockpit is virtual reality. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that definitely makes sense because I'm sitting in a real cockpit, so I'm touching, you know, like real controls, but the world outside of me is, you know, virtual. So I can do some true training exercises without like just touching a joystick like on a video game. Yeah, I think that would really enhance a training experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously then, you know, what you get is higher fidelity experiences, right? So in VR, when you're training people in VR, you know, the problem with VR today is a lack of haptic feedback. So you want to be able to touch kind of real things to really truly bring that immersion. And so that's why, you know, people working in kind of, you know, training pilots, you know, that they need that tactile feedback in the cockpit and things like that. You know, they want to be able to remember the feeling of flipping a switch or touching a screen or turning a dial or whatever. So that's a really important part of it. But that's why, you know, there's AR, there's VR, there's MR. And that's why, just to save everyone a lot of time, we call it spatial computing, because we believe that these technologies are really about how humans and machines work together in 3D space.
Yeah, when I was at VMworld, I had a chance to demo both. So I did a virtual reality, and it was this, I think I was building, and I think it was also in your VMworld session, but I took the virtual reality tour of building a rocket ship, which was interesting, right? So I'm completely submerged in this virtual environment, which actually was interesting. When you turn around, Glenn, like it almost... After being in there for a couple of minutes, you really almost, you know, because at first you're like, this doesn't look real. This is weird. I feel like I'm in a video game. But then, like, after a while, when you're in there, it's like there's one point where I was like by a ledge and I almost felt like I was going to fall. I was like, wow, I'm really in this world right now. But yeah, you have to like look at a rocket engine and it shows you what part to pick up. And then you have these gloves and you literally pick it up and you're moving it and putting it into the engine. So very, very cool experience. And I could see how that would work with training. I don't know if I would want to use that type of environment for like a work environment though, because I feel like I would need to have some sense of reality. I'd need to know where things are. Plus, I feel like I'd be a little vulnerable if I was completely, you know, blocked from the world for an extended amount of time. I feel like that might not be very good. I might get my wallet stolen or something.
I don't know. I think it comes down to the use case, right? I mean, if you can imagine your laptop going away and then putting one of these headsets on and having 20, 30 screens in front of you and being able to control those screens and put whatever you want on those screens, you know, there's definitely use cases where people want that.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
I also think that's why there's the different flavors within spatial computing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and we've actually been playing around with that. Obviously, you know, my background in EUC and you know, VMware Horizon, we grabbed one of the latest AR headsets, a headset by a company called Magic Leap, the Magic Leap 1. And you can connect to a Horizon desktop there and Horizon apps, and you can kind of spin up multiple sessions. So you kind of build out this spatial environment where you can be sat at a desk, you just have the headset on, it's got like a little puck, which is... essentially a Linux, I shouldn't call it Android. It's a Linux device with some Android services on it. But you can connect to Horizon. You can spin up lots of different kind of 2D applications. So you get rid of the laptop, you get rid of your screen. We had a little Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. Connect that to the headset and you can do kind of productivity, right? And you can see around you as well. So you're not occluded. It's not a VR headset. It's AR, so it's pass-through. So you can see everything that's going on around you. But you have this wonderful experience of kind of, you know, all the different apps and screens and things that you want kind of all around you, right? You can have CNN playing in the background over here. You know, you can have, you know, lots of different applications playing. Yep. And it really kind of started to spark that concept of workspace of the future for us.
And I think what you're hitting on the head here is like there are probably 20, 30, 40, 50 VR headsets. There's, you know, tens of AR headsets. There's, you know, Google Cardboard, where you can put your phone inside of a piece of cardboard and be in a 360 environment. There's all these different headsets and different things that you can use, because there are so many different use cases. It might be okay that I put on a piece of cardboard just to be in a 360 environment and watch, yeah, you know, Pat on stage delivering an all hands, because that's all I need to do. I don't need to interact with him. I don't need any other information.
Sure.
But, you know, for some of the other headsets, you may need a wider field of view. You may need that clarity. You may need to use your controllers or even use your hands. So it really does come down to the use case as to which device you use.
Oh, yes. I don't know which one John was using, but when we were at the booth and we were, Alan, you were showing us how to assemble a computer. And those were, I would guess those would be more augmented reality, because you can actually see the server in front of you and then it shows you where to put, say, like the fans, right? Yeah. So he's got these fans to the right and you can see those, but it also has like this image of where they go. And so it's helping you in the training. That's where I made my mistake, because I thought John couldn't see. I assumed he had one of those VR headsets on where he couldn't see. So I was like going in front of him and putting my hands in front of him. And he looked at me, he's like, "I can see you." I was like, "Oh, okay. Never mind." That's how I learned.
Yeah, that was a great example. And the device we were using there is the Magic Leap that Matt was talking about a moment ago. And in that example, we were showing how you can build this server and we overlay animations in real life. We overlay the instructions in real life. And all of those are pulled from our cloud platform. And it assists you in building that server. But I mean, the idea behind it being augmented reality is that it's not just one server it's building there. It's basically custom orders. So I may have a server order for a single customer that says, I want a certain GPU in there. I want this disk configuration and this disk sizes, and I want this memory. And then that is the instruction that we give to that user to build, and they'll build that. And then the next person may have a completely different server that they want built. So using that, you can give the person the instructions. In fact, the prototype app that we started with there that will emphasize this a little bit more was actually a coffee app. So creating a coffee or making a coffee for somebody in a coffee shop. I mean, you've been in Starbucks before, right? How many times do people order, a frocca mocha chocca with 9 pumps of syrup and 6 pumps of mint and all this kind of weird stuff, right? Each individual order is different. And if you had that overlaid in front of you and the instructions on how to make that, it certainly saves time and saves effort.
Oh yeah, that was another right there, the directions. I really appreciated that too, because as you're moving around the table, so you're not stuck to a certain place, right? You're moving around the table, you're assembling the server or in your example, the coffee, but you don't have to like go back to the table and look at this piece of paper with the instructions. It's like, it's literally in your interface of your glasses. So it's like always like to the top right or wherever. And it's like, it definitely seems like a smarter way to do some sort of, assisted training. I could see how like in like 5 years, that's just going to be like a very common thing in places like coffee shops and other places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the benefit of that headset is that you aren't tethered to a physical PC that sat there. The actual headset has a what they call a puck, which is basically the compute, GPU, and memory inside of it. So like you said, you can walk around. And the amount of people I saw trying to reach over that desk and insert the PSU in from the front of the desk, and I was like, no, you can actually walk around, And they're like, oh yeah, of course I can. And then when they went around, they were surprised that our UI interface actually followed them as well, and now the instructions were directly in front of them because a few people were kind of looking over their shoulder expecting them to be behind them somewhere.
Oh yeah.
So it's great to watch people use that.
And I think Pete, to go back to your point as well, one of the challenges we have is we're kind of IT professionals, right? And we work in IT, is getting people away of kind of getting them away from picturing themselves wearing these headsets, because to some extent, a lot of the kind of first people that are going to benefit from this technology are usually kind of the frontline workers, right? People in the factory, people working in dangerous situations, people oil and gas, right? They're not typically going to people at the desktop. Yes, we've got that kind of workspace of the future concept. But right now, this technology is being deployed by the aircraft manufacturers, right? And to give you some stats, they ran a wiring exercise, wiring up the aircraft, very complex. And what they found after using augmented reality is they reduced human error in the wiring by 90%.
Wow.
And people were doing the wiring 25% faster. Now, if you can imagine a 90% reduction in errors, it's just incredible, right? There's some real opportunity here around augmented workflows. So guiding people, making sure they're not making mistakes. One of the things that we're doing that might not have been obvious in our demos, we're also using computer vision to validate steps that you're doing. So we're using machine learning to understand how do you build that server correctly. And it could be building anything, right? You could be building a spaceship, right? You could be building an aircraft, you could be building a car or fixing a car. We're using machine learning to make sure that the machine knows how it should be built. And if you make a wrong step, we can interrupt and say, hey, you've installed that upside down. I always use that great story of the Russian rocket where the engineer installed the IMU upside down. And when it took off, it basically diverted itself. So it basically flew into the ground. And when they went back, they realized the guy had just like forced this thing in. And so we hope that AR, guided augmented workflows is going to stop that kind of thing, stop mistakes being made, and actually allow people to do things faster with better quality. And that's really important. I think that would be a major kind of impact for the bottom line for a lot of our customers.
So now that we've established how the spatial computing space is really kind of eking into everything that we do in the IT space and slowly going to become a bigger and bigger part of our ongoing world, what exactly are we doing in this project to help make those next generation initiatives work? Like, what exactly is Project VXR?
Yes, I can start out on that one. What we're, our remit, first of all, is to listen to our customers. To work with our customers to understand what problems we can solve with augmented reality, virtual reality, spatial computing. So, you know, first thing we did is obviously went out, looked at the market, understood what's going on out there, what customers are using it, why are they using it, you know, what industries are using it, how are they using it, and then how VMware plays in that as well. So that was, you know, the first thing that we did. We want to make sure that we are completely customer focused and that we're not just putting this on to be, you know, a high-tech geek with a shoebox on your face, but we're actually solving real-world problems with it, right? I mean, we have this thing in our team that Matt and I often say, which is, if you can do it via your laptop or you can do it via your phone or your iPad, then do it by that. You know, if it's going to be quicker and easier to do it by that. There's no point in putting a VR headset on just so you look geeky.
Yeah.
Right. So realistically, you know, throwing VMs into a cloud, I can't really see people doing that other than it makes a great demo right now. You know, you're not really going to put it on to manage vSphere every single day. Having said that, there are probably, you know, a couple of IT use cases that I do see some advantages, like troubleshooting. You know, it would be great to put on a headset and understand where that issue is, be able to kind of pull that VM in and follow the network packet down the line and see where it hits the firewall and expand that firewall and be able to take a look at that. You know, the visual aspect of things would really help with troubleshooting. I can get that. But, you know, so first thing we did, like I said, we went out, we tried to understand what the market was and talk to some of our customers that are already using this. And then we came back and decided to start creating what we think is going to be what our customers will want to use and start solving some of those problems that they're already hitting. And there's a number of different issues that they have all the way from the start of actually getting these devices. I mean, some people are already using these devices and deploying thousands of them, and then, you know, certainly doing POCs. And then when they take it into IT, the first thing IT does is takes a look at it and goes, what the hell is that? I don't know how to manage that. I don't know how to add it to the network. I don't know how to deploy a profile to it. I don't know how to secure it. How do I wipe it? You know, so you know, first step is obviously taking a look at that and taking a look at what VMware is doing on the end user computing side and seeing if we can help there. And then, you know, as we progressed more, we started looking at some of the use cases that we've spoken about already. We've started looking at training. So what can we do with virtual reality to train people so that when they do create these rocket engines, if they do drop a $1 million computer, it doesn't matter because you're inside of virtual reality. You can train people over and over and over, right? There's some great things that are enabled by virtual reality training in that you're not going to hurt yourself. Unless, of course, you walk into a wall or something, but you know, but generally, you're not gonna hurt yourself by you know, flicking a button or doing something complex and something that's, you know, often gonna kill you if you do it in real life. So training over and over and over in virtual reality means that you're less likely to do that in real life.
I think just to simplify it, you know, is that, you know, we're doing essentially what VMware has always done. You know, VMware has been very successful in abstracting above the hardware. And as Alan mentioned earlier, right, is there's this plethora of devices coming out and our customers are faced kind of like, you know, which device do I use? And almost certainly they're having to use multiple devices and multiple, what we call multimodal, right? They're having to use VR and AR. And so what we're saying is, look, let's do what VMware always does, abstract above the hardware. Let's provide, you know, client software or a client application that runs across these different platforms. That's the first piece. They have consistent user experience, consistent management experience. So it needs to plug into Workspace ONE so they can manage it and secure it and all those great things. It runs across these different platforms. It provides consistent user experience, right? That's the first piece, abstract above those devices. And then the second piece is provide the services and infrastructure that spatial computing needs, right? So we've already talked about, you can imagine, you know, workflow systems for augmented workflow training, you know, kind of a platform to host your training content. All those kind of things, you know, we talked a little about machine learning, so computer vision services, so a set of cloud services that customers can consume to be able to deploy these applications that are useful. You know, integrating into our existing business systems is another key thing. So providing the infrastructure and services to deliver that. And then the third piece is something that obviously, you know, everyone's seeing now is VMware work becoming more and more kind of, you know, an application developer, right? You know, everything that we're doing around, you know, cloud native applications. So we're looking at building a toolkit as well that can help get our customers up and running super quick.
Nice.
With the apps that they want to build. So, you know, the problems our customers came to have said is the devices, that's difficult for us. Getting up to speed with content and experiences. And then thirdly, the services and infrastructure. So those are the three key areas we're going after, you know, and really when you look at it, this is a technology adoption challenge. And that's what VMware does brilliantly, is it allows customers consume technology in a fast and simple manner. So let's give them an app client app that runs across the devices and a set of services and a SDK to be able to build the apps, build the experiences and consume the services.
And so this app is just the, it's, this is the Project VXR is having this, this app that does that, that's going to help you to build the services and to manage them and do deployment as well. Is that, it seems like a lot of different pieces.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a, so the app is the client side piece, right? So think of it as, you know, that, that first challenge, how do we secure that, right? So you want to get an application down onto the device that is going to provide secure access. That's the first thing. So you want the app to be able to connect into a corporate IDP, you know, authentication and that kind of thing. Today, a lot of these devices are coming from consumers, so they're not necessarily enterprise ready. So by putting our app down onto the device, you get that immediate enterprise security, connects into your EUC system. Now, if you're a Workspace ONE customer, right, that means you can start managing that device. You can start consuming the apps, you know, installing the apps from Workspace ONE onto the device to start accessing those applications. So our first use case on the client is app secure app access, right? Let's make sure you secure the device and then you can, on a per user basis, access the experiences and applications that have been provisioned to you. And then the next two use cases are, you know, obviously the immersive training is one and augmented workflows is the other. And we're looking at the services and the components needed for customers to build their own experiences with that. So we're building like a framework that allows them to build their own ones, their own experiences.
It'll probably skate underneath the radar a little bit, but I'm way more excited about that Workspace ONE integration than I probably should be. Because to me, it's just like that instantly makes this production ready, something that's ready to be consumed. You can just go grab a set of glasses and how many different applications work in space inside Workspace ONE? And now all of them I could just throw inside a window up here on the wall over to the side where I don't have a screen. Like that's just, that was always, that was the thing that popped in my mind when the first release trailers for HoloLens came out. You know, just this, this idea of augmenting workflow and being able to connect virtual spaces with the actual normal, you know, computing devices that we use day to day. And Workspace ONE does that in a relatively seamless way without having to go out and reinvent a bunch of stuff.
You're absolutely right. One of the demos that we gave at VMworld was actually, you know, I would put on the headset and go inside of there and you would be inside of an office, a virtual office, and you would have your Workspace ONE icons in front of you and you would be able to launch these and kind of drag them around, scale them, move them around, as you said, you know, web-based applications. And we also had a third-party application in there as well, a Twitter client. Basically bring up. So yeah, absolutely with you, Glenn. I don't think it should be underestimated. It's going to be awesome to bring those existing 2D applications into that 3D interface and manipulate them as well.
I like it. Yeah, I almost forgot my first exposure to real true augmented reality. It's a shame that this is all that iPhone really offered, but you know, because I heard you say in your session that everyone has an AR device. It's your iPhone, right? Like that's a, you know, you can do things with your iPhone that it technically has like AR, but it's sad that the only one that I could like come to mind was that stupid game, Pokemon Go.
I was waiting for it. I knew you were going to say it.
Yeah, because it
plays Pokemon Go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, like what's the guy's name? Yeah, Pikachu. Pikachu, like, not me. John used to like that game, but it just, I was like, wow, is this? So we have this really cool technology of augmented reality. And what do? Well, we go around neighborhoods and look for cartoons.
It's a good example. It certainly explains what augmented reality is. And they did do some cool stuff there. And, you know, it's important baby steps, I guess. We're more looking at the enterprise use cases than... Don't expect any Pokemon in your office.
Man, I could see it now. You know, you're building your vSAN server and all of a sudden like a little Duncan Epping comes out and says, add two disk groups.
Well, you know, without getting too pedantic, like there is a little bit of a connection to this. Like this is the advantage of building off consumer devices. I mean, most of these enterprise applications are written in a game library. Like they use game SDKs to actually code these training applications.
Absolutely.
So as Epic makes advancements, like that just feeds right back into the aerospace industry. The aerospace industry feeds into the medical industry. It all intertwines in a really interesting way where like this is way past the point of Virtual Boy. This is not 3D TVs. This tech is real. It is going to be here forever. May not take over the world, but it's going to be part of what we do from here on forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, you hit the point right on the head there. I mean, it's Unity and it's Unreal, you know, both traditionally gaming engines, but certainly being adapted to be more enterprise ready and to create these enterprise ready applications right now. In fact, we're using Unity right now to do that.
Nice.
Sweet.
Yeah. So if people want to learn more about this, you know, I'm definitely going to leave some links on the show notes of this page, on certainly to your session, to some of the blogs I've seen. But if somebody wants to learn more or get involved, is there any way they can reach out to you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of different ways. You know, obviously I'm on Twitter as Alan Renouf. We have a Project VXR Twitter handle as well. There is the Office of the CTO blog, where we've started to publish some of our findings and some of our tips and tricks as to what we've been doing in virtual reality and augmented reality and developing in that way. You know, I'm happy to give out my email address as well. It's Renoufa, R-E-N-O-U-F-A, at VMware.com. Always interested to hear what people are doing with virtual reality and augmented reality. You know, geek out with them, give them advice on headsets, bring them up to date. And just hear about their use cases as well. I know every single time I talk to somebody, I learn something from it as well. And it ultimately ends up in our product being better. So please do reach out to me.
Yeah, and if you want to reach me, I'm available on Twitter. It's mcopping on my Twitter handle. And then we also have an email address for the team, vxr@vmware.com. You can always contact us that way as well.
Nice.
Just in the sake of me saving you 15,000 emails, you want to go ahead and answer one question publicly?
Yeah, go for it.
Which headset should I buy?
Yeah, so well, I told you earlier, but it was all about the use case, right? But most people's use case coming up to Christmas and having children is gaming, and it's a good place to start, you know, just to understand what's going on. My go-to device at the moment is the Oculus Quest. It's a standalone device. It gives you what's called 6 degrees of freedom. So I can move around. I can see exactly where my controllers are. It understands what the position of my head, my position relative to the floor. It gives you a great experience, and you don't need the hefty PC. It's a standalone device. So, having said that, you can actually now plug that into a PC if you do have a decent GPU to get the better quality games. Certainly an awesome device that is ultimately owned by Facebook right now, because they bought Oculus, and it's, you know, $399 in Best Buy, so you can go out and buy one right now.
Nice.
Yeah, and we should probably, for those, you know, the PC Master Race out there that have been waiting for Half-Life 3, you know, Valve just announced Half-Life Alyx as a VR exclusive title. Yeah. And of course, they're offering the Valve Index, which is a pretty high fidelity, you know, it's expensive headset, but if you're a big PC gamer, then that's probably one of the go-to headsets. And obviously, Oculus have their Rift S PC-based headset as well. But yeah, those are the options right now, definitely.
Glenn, we should have published this before Cyber Monday, man. Now everyone has to pay full price.
Yeah, they did have a good deal on Quest on Cyber Monday, actually, where you could buy the Quest and you get Vader Immortal 1, 2, and 3. So there's basically three versions of Star Wars games where you literally stand in front of Darth Vader and you're at Vader and you're fighting him with a lightsaber. And I tell you what, I didn't realize from the films how tall Darth Vader was until you're stood in front of him. And that guy is scary.
I like it.
And it's this point I should reiterate that VR and AR and spatial computing isn't about games.
Yes, absolutely not.
I mean, there's some wonderful gaming experiences, but definitely, I mean, on the enterprise, like we said, you know, we talked a lot about AR, but we didn't get a chance to talk about VR and some of the benefits there. There's some incredible stats around training for VR as well, particularly in healthcare. I won't bore you with them now, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of studies that are showing how effective VR is with enterprise training.
I will say this for all of you that are listening, please watch the VMworld session that these gentlemen did. It definitely covered that. It's where I first got, you know, exposed to the idea of surgeons using this to practice and all the different training use cases. It definitely opened my mind to this. So yeah, let this be an introduction to the session that actually dives a little deeper.
I'm perfectly willing to be wrong about this and to eat crow in the future, but you know, if you were to put a gun to my head and force me to pick, I don't actually think that all the video game stuff is going to be what outlasts in this tech. I think the video game stuff has developed the hardware that industry is now going to go pick up and go run with, and that's going to be the future of this technology, if you ask me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, Glenn. I think that's absolutely, you know, I think that's definitely the case.
I like it. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, we'll be sure to leave all the links to the blog posts and show notes out there. So I appreciate you guys joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Matt and Alan for joining us and for Glenn co-hosting. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
beating you.
See?
Enough of this jibber jabber.